views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you are listening to the Conscious Business Radio Network on Transformation Talk Radio. And it is a pleasure to have Jerome Van Stratten back today to share with you the full interview, most of the interview from last week. And he is going to come on and talk about the different conferences that he does and what the motivation was behind the Breakthrough Energy Movement and also the Secret Space Conference. And like I said, this is just a mind-opening experience for people. And, you know, Business Game Changers is about edgy, disruptive things. And in order to get there mentally, your brain has to be able to go and look at different things and be open-minded about stuff. And if you're closed-minded, then it just doesn't work. You can't really create disruptive technologies. However, it's important to look at the truth and to look at facts and not to be goofy about things. And, you know, journalism is about professionalism, looking at things that really happened and facts behind it. But if you decide to put your head in a hole and ignore things that are happening and truth and just go with the party line, then you're missing out on so much in this world. And your paradigm isn't, you know, I don't think it's a real paradigm. I think it's a very cut off paradigm. And I just don't think that your brain is, if your brain's not open to opportunities to think outside the box, then it's very difficult to create innovative and new technologies and business things as well. So it'll be a fascinating discussion with him. But before we get into that, we need our resident financial expert to give us another example of how to use the seven natures to evolve with your money. So here's Tom Shepherd from Shepherd Financial.
Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program again.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm really good. You have an interesting story you're going to tell us this time about investing in the stock market. And I thought this was really a timely one based on just how people are dealing with, you know, the market.
Yeah, all of a sudden volatility seems to have returned. And now the way we felt is challenged because we just haven't had to deal with this very often in the last few years.
So
the story that that I said I would tell you about was, you know, one of my clients and his wife, they have stock, a lot of stock in one company.
Uh-huh.
And so a number of years ago.
I think I know what you're going to say.
So a number of years ago, they decided to put most of their money into this one stock. And partly it was because they knew some people, and partly because it was in a particular sector and seemed to be an exciting sort of thing. So so they bought it. It's trading around 6. It went up to like 13. And I asked them, I said, what's your exit strategy? And he said, I'm not really sure. And we came up with some different prices and different schemes and created an Excel spreadsheet to show him, you know, how much he had in it and what would happen if it went up a certain amount or down a certain amount. And really tried to get him to diversify. And I think we got him to let go of a little bit of money. and put it in some other things. But it went from 13 back down to 2.
Oh, geez. So he lost two-thirds of his money at that point in his mind. He probably, in his mind, he lost the more than that because it was up at 13.
Yeah, and you could tell he certainly was attached to the number 13.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he never really led me to believe that he was disappointed that he'd lost the money, but he certainly wasn't going to sell at 13 if it got back there. And that became clear as it hit 13, and then it hit 14, and we started to have that conversation again and brought out the spreadsheets again, and it rose all the way into the 20s.
Ooh, so what he wanted to... Did he want to keep it because he just imagined it was going to go through the roof?
Yeah, he imagined that it was going to be a home run stock, you know?
Yeah, so what...
Imagine if you owned the stock that had the cure for cancer. I mean, it's that kind of mentality. So so it did go up, and we finally got some of it out of the market. But then it dropped 10%. And then you wanted to put it back in the market. And I said, no, you can't. You know, you have to start diversifying this, which means when you take some money out, you need to.
So what was his nature?
So his nature is the investor.
Okay.
And so if we took the money out and we didn't do something else with it immediately, it would be sitting there and it would gnaw at him that that money that we had taken out wasn't invested. And there's only one thing that he was following. He wasn't following the stock market in general. He wasn't following bonds or real estate. He was only following one thing. And there's a saying in skiing, if you don't want to hit a tree, don't look at it. And I think that applies here. The money that was in, that was now in a, you know, money market account off to the side of his one investment that he was paying attention to, started to drive him crazy as an investor. That money can't be sitting there doing nothing. So it corrected 10%. And he put the rest of the money back in. It went up just a little bit longer, and then it dropped all the way back down to 4.
Oh, gosh. So poor guy.
As we speak, it's hovering around 7, 750. It jumped up to $9 a couple weeks ago, and then sort of trended back down to where it currently sits.
And he's doing a little bit better because he diversified.
But the diversification he did was way back when.
Okay.
Like at 13. And he has not taken advantage of the stock when it was up into 20, 22, 23. You got to have some kind of an exit strategy, or you really are just waiting at the table for the house to take your money.
Yeah, so you have to say, I mean, you pretty much just say when the stock gets to this point, we're exiting. We'll take our gains, leave, and then we'll come up with a new strategy. And you want to diversify too, right?
The whole reason to diversify is so that maybe you're paying attention to the bigger picture. Maybe you're paying attention to the things that are a risk to you and your family, not just speculating on some home run stock. The whole idea of an investor is to create a second income that hedges your first income and generates more income, and you reinvest that, and you kind of grow slowly over time.
I also think of it as a way to hedge against inflation too. I mean, just so your money keeps going and doesn't get knocked with inflation.
Right. And inflation is just the things you need to purchase in the future compared to now will be more expensive.
Exactly.
And so, you know, whether it's heating oil or gasoline or telecommunications costs, whatever it is that you're spending money on, there's a place that you can invest it in the stock market.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for joining us. I know we're going to have you back for a question and answer here soon. So that will be fun for people can call in and ask you questions directly. So thank you and have a great day.
You're very welcome. Be well.
I want to thank Tom for providing those examples to us. I hope people are getting something out of it. He is going to be coming onto the show and doing a 20-minute answer session in a few weeks here, and that should be interesting for folks. And hopefully you will call in and, you know, take the time to learn from him. He really has done a lot of research in this area, and it's pretty fascinating. And you can find more information on him at my website at sarahwestall.com. And now we are going to be joined with Jeroen Van Stratten.
Hi, Jeroen. Thanks for joining me today on the program.
I'm happy to be here, Sarah.
That's great. I really wanted you here because I wanted to talk about some of these conferences that you put on. You put on the Secret Space Program, and you also did the Alternative Energy Conference. What is your motivation behind these conferences? They might be two different motivations. Can you speak to that?
I've been listening to alternative podcasts since I was like 19 or 20. And yeah, when you listen to alternative podcasts, you get caught up in conspiracies, in free energy, in UFOs, all those kind of topics. And yeah, the one that really always excited me was the Secret Space Program. That really cut my imagination because I was a huge Star Wars fan. So I was always into science fiction and that kind of stuff. But there came a point that I thought in my life, okay, you can listen to all those podcasts and that's all nice. And it's like a sort of entertainment for you. But maybe you should get off your butt and try to educate people about these kind of things. Because I've always...
And something a little more professional?
Yeah, but I've always known as a little kid that the system that we live in or this kind of world is not my kind of world. There's something wrong in this world. And when you get into these kind of topics, paradigm is going to shift in your way of thinking. And, I just didn't want it to be entertainment for me. I wanted to be part of the change. And then I thought, okay, I want to do a conference about the Secret Space Program, especially, and not about UFOs. Maybe we can talk about the difference later. And when I did that first conference here in Holland in 2011, when I really got into this topic, Then you find out that everything is energy related. You name a topic and it's energy related in some kind of way. And that's when I realized that, yes, there are conferences on breakthrough energy. I like to use that term and not free energy. I can also explain you later why. There are no breakthrough energy conferences in an educational way on the implication side. It's all very technical, the conferences.
Sure, because there's social ramifications and there's geopolitical issues and there's all sorts of other things.
Yeah, and I wanted to put on a conference for the layman to explain a little bit about those kind of implications. What's it going to mean for the daily life person, for their economy, for their health? So we focus more on those kind of topics than on the technical side. We also have speakers on the technical side. But, and I really wanted to steer it throughout the years into a movement. Now, that didn't happen yet because of resources and manpower and,
You mean the movement for the Secret Space Program? You want
no,
that
no, no, no.
For the energy?
Yeah, the energy, okay. The global BEM. It's called Global BEM, and BEM stands for Breakthrough Energy Movement. Yeah, I think sooner or later we have to hit the streets with a large amount of people and demand that we want these technologies to benefit our lives in a responsible way.
And do you, through your experience doing that conference, have you run across multiple different technologies that could be implemented now that could help people, but they're obstructed because of different reasons?
I've never seen a technology working. I've spoken, of course, to a lot of people who have seen it. Or we had one speaker at our program, Tom Fallone. He worked at the patent office. He saw all the patents there that were denied about these technologies, and it runs to the thousands.
You mean so that people will put patents through and they deny them for what purposes?
they deny them because these technologies, for all kinds of reasons, can't come out for decades now.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that. It wasn't for like a real reason that it's infringing on another patent. It's pretty much, they just deny it.
They deny it, and some people got killed over it, and they've got all kinds of ways to suppress these technologies.
Well, that's what makes the University of Colorado's patents so interesting, is because they actually hold the patents for the energy, you know, the energy show that I had on with Jovian Energy. It's really interesting because they haven't run into those obstacles yet.
Not yet. And it also depends on what kind of technology. And what is the goal of the people behind the technology? Are they, for instance, working on a battery like you had that gentleman on from Jovian? Or are they actually working on a device that can run your house or your car?
Oh, yeah. They're working on batteries for smaller devices like laptops and phones. And it's really interesting. It is an alternative way of doing it, but they're not taking on the world yet, you know.
No. And it's a good stepping stone technology. I see these kind of things as an in-between. But our movement is really focusing on, okay, let's skip that in-between and let's go to the real good stuff. Because I'm 100% sure that it exists there.
Okay. Interesting. So why did you focus on the secret space program? Are you still doing the energy conference? And now you've added the secret space program to your list of things that you do?
We first put on the secret space conference in 2011. Then we did an energy conference in 2012. They were both in Holland.
Okay.
I think America is a much interesting place to be than Holland for these kind of conferences, because most of the speakers are coming from the USA. You have a bigger market there, so there's more interest. So we did another Break for Energy conference in Boulder, Colorado in 2014. And we did another secret space program last year in 2014 in San Mateo at San Francisco.
Okay.
So we do them both, but we do this stuff with, actually it's me and Robert Dopper. We do it with the two of us. We have some help from other people, but 80% of the work we do with the two of us besides our matrix job. So it's all in the free time. We would like to do this 24/7 and then we can put on more events, but because of resources and manpower, that's not possible yet.
Do you make money on these conferences or is it just a nonprofit adventure for you?
We are a nonprofit organization.
But are you making money to pay yourself a salary?
No.
Okay. So basically, the goal would be to build it enough so that you can pay yourself something for the organization of it and be able to devote your time to it.
That is not the main goal. Of course, the main goal is to get the
word
out.
No, but I mean, for you to be able to really dive into it, not so that you can make this big profit, but, you know, nonprofits make enough money to pay the people that are doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's you got to eat too.
Yeah. But we're really dependent on ticket sales. And once in a while you have a little sponsor, but we haven't come across yet somebody who said, okay, I'm going to fund you and let's step this up. Because the kind of conferences that I have seen in this alternative community, we're not going to reach mainstream with these kind of conferences. They do it the old way, they do it the alternative way, and it's just not a mainstream product. So that's what we're trying to do with our conferences, to get a higher quality. We invest a lot of money in AV and how things look, the website, how do you package things that you can make the bridge to mainstream sooner
Because I think the important difference, and this is why the reason why I always had a problem connecting with some of the people, is that they don't come across as professional. And what I've noticed the difference, and that's why I like Daniel so much, Dark Journalist, is he's just so professional. And people that's always been the block, the stumbling block, is finding people that are, you know, that have really good educations and that they're serious people doing serious work looking into things. And I think that's the difference now, is there's a lot more people that are professionals, they're serious, they're people that you wouldn't laugh at, and they're coming up with things that are real. And that's what's making the difference as to how people can take this more seriously. And, you know, I wouldn't want to put my reputation on the line having anybody on my show if I thought that they were not serious and not professional, because it's just not, I don't want to mess around with something that's goofy, you know. But, you know, 60 Minutes had something on a couple months ago where they had the Secret Space Command on, and they actually showed a space plane that they had. And I think it's the first time that they came forward showing the space plane. But they didn't talk about it much. They just kind of showed it, and then they kind of glossed over it. But that what that really showed you is, you know, the development of space and technology isn't happening in NASA anymore. It's happening in different parts of our government. And that was very clear by that 60 Minutes episode. It's very clear that NASA is not getting the funding they used to. You don't see new technology. You don't see a space plane coming out of NASA. But we saw it coming out of Space Command, which is part of the Air Force. So that right there, that one show shows you that there's something, there's a lot more going on there that we don't know. They also showed the way that they could do lasers up and knock things out of space. And I think it was a very, I think it was a message going to China. I don't know why they came forward then a couple months ago and shared all this stuff on 60 Minutes. Maybe it was a message to, you know, to China, because they were talking about a space war with China and how things are going on. And they also showed how they made a very clear message that in the outer atmosphere, you know, that there's like different, what do you call it, orbits around the Earth. And the very outer orbit, they have things out there watching what's going on, and they wanted to make it clear that they were watching what was going on. So to me, I thought that was more of a message going to China that, hey, we're, you know, don't mess with us, we take us seriously. But the indication to, you know, what people should get out of that too is, hello, there's more going on here, and where is all this money going, and when is it that we should know how much they've have advanced in space. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it's so interesting what you're doing.
And it's one of the things that we like people to get in our minds. It is, and you already touched upon it, you can't talk about governments or countries. You name China, and of course China has their own space program now, and they want to go to the moon. But what we're seeing is that it's really big company that is in connection with the intelligence communities around the world who's calling the shots. So you can't really say, okay, this is a U.S. operation or a U.K. operation. No, it's certain elements of those countries. It's certain persons who represent certain companies who are in these kind of programs.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Corporations in general, whether you're Walmart or they claim to be a U.S. company, but it's really an international. I mean, once you're in all these different countries, you become an international company. You're no longer a company for that country, right? You're a citizen of the world. And corporations have just changed that way. And I would say that the military companies are the same way. They're supplying arms all over the world. And I would think for the space program, it would be the same concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, you've got different factions. But, and here, a lot of us differ. On which level is it still, are there certain factions? Or, at the highest levels, is there one faction, Earth? Because what we also, what we're doing with the conference is we're looking back in history. What did the intelligence community do at certain points? What were the decisions made by certain governments at one time, legislation-wise? And what happened in the in the economy at certain points? And you can see that there was a big decision made in 1947 when they implemented the National Security Act. Now, some people are still stuck in that idea that there's a war going on Earth here between different factions. And I agree with that until a certain level. Because when it comes to we Earthlings, and if there's a threat outside coming to Earth, then maybe at that level they're working together. And one of the examples that implements that, points to that, is that the Russians are still providing the rocket technology to the Americans. Now, you've got all those sanctions going on.
So why would they be providing rocket technology to us in the middle of us having an ISIS, a central war with them?
Yeah, and also the sanctions that are going on because of the Ukraine crisis. So at one point, at one level, we're sanctioning, or we, the Americans or the alliance, are sanctioning Russia. But on the other hand, they're still taking their rocket technology because, or else they can't operate. Now, that's a little indicator that there's more going on. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that if they found out in the past that there's an outside threat to Earth, I think you can better be sure that at the highest levels, the Americans, the Russians, the Chinese, all the big players, or out of those companies that are now taking over, that they're working together.
Well, Colin Paul always used to say that the number one way to get people to unite is to have a common enemy. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you're saying, is that they're probably working together towards this common enemy that is a threat to the Earth. Well, and what kind of evidence do you have out there that there is a threat to the Earth from some other life forms that's not humans?
One example is, this is a theory of Joseph P. Farrell, one of our speakers, is that there have been numerous of times that there were UFO sightings, but there was also tampering with a nuclear bases throughout the world. And this is documented, that nuclear silos were put on and off, that they started countdowns, that whole systems were shut down. Now,
say it's documented in the military documents, right? And
yeah.
And military officers and different people have come forward on record and have talked about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And now there's two schools of thoughts. There's one of the people who all think UFOs are all friendly and benevolent. And they showed us an example of superiority, and we have to watch out with our nuclear technology as a warning.
Well, yeah, we'll return to Planet of the Apes, right? If nuclear war happens, it's stupid.
You you can also see it on the other side. If you are in the intelligence community or you're in the army and there's somebody fooling around with your nuclear bases, that is a threat.
Sure. If somebody has control of your nuclear ability to turn it on and off, that would be a threat. But if they're so much farther advanced than us, supposedly, what do we do about that?
That is the question, if they are still that much advanced or not. But the other example, even if they are more advanced than us, that shouldn't prohibit you from also getting to that level as the army or the intelligence community. But I think there's an even better example why we should be aware. And we're going to have two speakers touching upon that. The first one is Dr. John Brandenburg. Now, he comes up with research that there was a nuclear war on Mars. And he can prove that in a scientifically way, he says.
Now, and that there was a nuclear war, and when we had to go move to Earth or something back in the day?
No. It's the war was going on Mars and on other places in the solar system. Now, if that was us in the past, or it was somebody else, that is the question. Now, the second speaker who touches upon that is Joseph B. Farrell, and he goes into the cosmic wars. There's a lot of old scriptures all around the world in all kinds of religions who tell the story of a cosmic war in the past.
Well, and that's interesting because they have been finding all sorts of new archaeology, you know, with the ability for us to have solar or be able to see under the ground now with the satellite technology. They have found so much more structures and stuff under the earth. The pyramids, there's more pyramids, I think, under the earth in Egypt than there is above and all over the place, right? And so you're very familiar with that. I am sure you are more than I am. But that's what's so fascinating because that's fact. And I have been an avid listener and researcher lately of archaeology and learning that there is this belief that we were more advanced. You know, if you look at the older technology in Egypt, that's much more advanced than the newer buildings in Egypt. It's very fascinating. But I'm sorry to cut you off. Keep going. I wanted to throw that in for our listeners.
Yeah. Those scriptures are telling about somebody who came from the solar system. Now, if there was a war that destroyed planet like Mars, and there are other examples of planets there that were destroyed in cosmic war, then you have to ask yourself, okay, can this happen again? Who is out there with this kind of technology? And, yeah, what are we going to do about it? So I think that is one of the big motivations to have a secret space program. And you want to keep that off the books because these kind of concepts are not for mainstream public. You're not going to tell them that in the past there was a planet being blown up.
Why? Why can't we tell the mainstream public at minimal that we were more advanced before? Is it the religious reasons? Because But even in with the Bible, you can really look at, and Christianity and all these other religions, you can tie it to that, and it doesn't make things, I don't know. Is it religious reasons that they can't go there?
No. I don't think it's I think when Pandora's box is going to open, the academics are going to have a bigger problem than the people in the big religions.
Because, why is that?
Because what has been taught in universities on science, it can go out of the window. Because now let's go back to the energy question. If these technologies were online and this civilization was going off planet, this wasn't done with fossil fuel technology. This was done by what they call zero-point energy technology. Now, if that's the case, that already proves that it's out there, these kind of technologies. But we're not allowed to have them.
And why is that? Why are we so separated? Why can't we participate in the world or in the universe? Why are we declared as not worthy to participate?
Told you in the pre-chat that there's always multifaceted agendas going on.
Well, I know, but I want to know why I'm not worthy. Why can't I know? I want to know.
So I think it's on multiple reasons. Now one reason is because these technologies can be dangerous. Look at Mars. Look at 9/11.
Well, we already know about nuclear. Can't be much more dangerous than that.
These kind of technologies, like match in the kitchen, you say that phrase? I'm Dutch, so sometimes I'm a little bit stuck with words. But these kind of technologies are nothing compared to your nuclear technology.
Oh, you mean they're so much more powerful than nuclear? Because you're tapping into all the energy and the life force around us or something?
Yeah.
We can destroy life in an instant or something, all the life on our planet, versus a nuclear war where we just would destroy it in a big city?
There's research out there that claims that the asteroid belt, that was actually a planet. Now, you can't blow up a planet with a nuclear device. You need something bigger for that. But that is one thing. The other thing is that the control system that runs this planet for centuries is going to lose power when we are going to get access to these kind of technologies. Because it's going to open Pandora's box.
Okay, so when us minions get access to it, they're worried that they're going to lose power.
Yeah, and when Pandora's box is going to open, we're also going to be finding out that these technologies have been here for a long time, and they knew about it. And
so people are going to be mad.
They're going to be mad as hell. I think this is going to be one of the biggest things why they can't disclose it, because they're stuck in a catch-22 situation. That if they're not going to disclose it, we're going to point the finger to the group of people who kept this suppressed for so long time.
Well, don't you think they could slowly disclose it by advancing our civilization to the point where we catch up and then it doesn't matter anymore?
Everything is related. The same group of people who fund these kind of programs with the hidden system of finance, the same group of people who's behind Big Pharma. I'm convinced about it, that there's a cure for cancer already for decades that they're keeping suppressed. Now, who doesn't know people in their family who died of cancer? So there's going to be an outrage from people, and that's just one thing. You're talking about they have been tampering with our food for decades.
But you don't think there's a possibility that the food has been changed so that they can produce more food for the people that are on the planet, and there's such a profit motivation and people are not mindful of what they're doing, and the system is so profit-oriented, and there's also, you know, a certain percentage of people in our population are psychopaths. We just know there are. And those people tend to rise in power. Could it just be that we have some psychopaths in power who are just motivated by profit and are doing whatever it takes to make money and keep their power?
No, this is too big for profit, because you're talking about when you really do your research into the black budget programs, you're talking about trillions of dollars.
So you're saying that they're consciously thinking about it goes beyond being a psychopath and wanting profit, because they're conscious. It's too mindful. It's too conscious of what they're doing deliberately. That's very broad. And there's too many people, it's too complex and too involved that it can't just be a bunch of psychopaths wanting power and money.
But because I was also in that camp, that I thought it's all psychopaths, they do it for profit, they want to keep us down. But I'm starting to get to a point in my gut feeling, there's also another reason why they did it in this way. Now, I don't agree how they did it. But I think they got stuck in a financial system that provided to run these secret programs to maybe provide us protection in the future against an outside threat.
So you're saying they're not, you're saying they're better. They're better than that. They're not
To believe that there's a lot of people in these black programs that really have good intentions. But the system to sustain this program is not a good system, but they can't tell about it. Because then the lid is going to be blown off. Now, if you want to keep something secret because you can't tell the people yet what's going on, you need a hidden system of finance to provide in that. I was talking about that we can't see this kind of thing in a black and white perspective. We actually don't know the reasons why they did it. Now, one of the reasons is because I really believe that there's a lot of good people in these black projects. There's also some psychopaths there. It's just
well,
a normal...
Yeah, it's a normal – there's psychopaths everywhere, right? We've all run into psychopaths, and it causes all of us pain.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's well documented that a certain percentage of people in the world are psychopaths. But my question is, you know, the black budget, there is a black budget that's $50 billion a year or something that's on the U.S. budget, right? It's a disclosed black budget. But we're not talking that black budget, are we? We're talking a seriously much larger. We're talking like when Rumsfeld was saying there was he said 2.3 trillion, but ended up being 2.7 trillion missing in 1 year back in 2001. We're talking that amount of money yearly, right, from all over the place. And it also could be tied, you know, when we a one-time audit of the Federal Reserve and there was $16 trillion given to foreign banks just in 1 year, that kind of money can be funneled through the Federal Reserve on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So we're talking lots and lots of money. And this is where Catherine Austin Fitz comes in, where she was able to get actual factual information about the black budget, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And when people say that this is about greed, when you're talking into the trillions, these people who run these programs, they've got their mansions and their cars. It's not that you're going to have hundreds of mansions. And that's not the goal of those people. This is not about greed or money. This is about...
Well, couldn't it be about power?
I think, yeah, of course. That is one aspect about it. But this is also... They need this much money to run a certain program. Now, the big question is, what are they running? What are the reasons that they need so much money to put into these programs?
And is this what the Secret Space program is diving into, is in a very professional way, diving into where this money's coming from, how much money it is, and talking about how it's used? Because I think people are having a hard time getting their head around, you know, this much money. And how do we, if it's all black budget, how do we know that it was really, you know, that it's real? And that's what I want to talk about is how do we know that this, I personally have seen enough corruption in my own little world to know that there's all sorts of stuff going on. I know that there was an audit of the Federal Reserve that showed $16 trillion being funneled to banks outside our country. I know that there was, Rumsfeld was talking about $2.7 trillion missing. So I've seen enough personally that has been factual to say, okay, there's something weird here. But how do we know it goes to that level? And what kind of information are you presenting that says, okay, this is real?
Now, it's not ending up in our economy, because you would have hyperinflation with these kind of numbers. So this money is going somewhere outside of the books. And it doesn't show, it disappears. It's a huge drain on our society, but it doesn't show up on the other side. But it is going somewhere. It's like energy. Energy never gets lost.
But with that much money, there's people and there's products and there's things going on. You just see it, right? So is that going to be addressed at the conference? Like, okay, this is serious money, and where you see it is here, and you know, you see it in this activity, you see it in these underground bases, you see it in, you know what I'm saying, to get some factual information so we can take this conversation from a level of conspiracy to, hey, this could be real, and this is real, and here are the facts behind it saying that this is something serious. Because without that, it then can just be written off as conspiracy.
Yeah, you're correct in that. Yeah, I think Catherine Austin Fitz does a magnificent job to point it out where the money is coming from, make a good guess how much it is, and where we think it's going. Now, the fourth question is, for what reason? That's everybody's guess.
And we got to say, she was the Secretary of Housing, right, under Bush, Assistant Secretary of Housing. And she had access to a lot of financial information, from what I understand. And she's a company on Wall Street, and she's pretty astute in the financial world, but she spent a lot of her life researching this, right, and putting these numbers together.
Is that accurate?
Yes, and what she's going to do in a part of this presentation on this conference is that she's gonna translate it. What does this mean for the everyday person in their life financially? Because you're not talking only about mortgage fraud that is hitting us. You're also talking about the drugs in the neighborhood. That's a big part of this whole equation. You're talking about, of course, the huge budgets that the military has. It is about unemployment. It's all related. It's all draining that money out of the system. And she's going to translate it. What does that mean on a personal base?
Well, see, I think that'll be good to see somebody who is understands finance to be doing that. Because I was watching a show where, you know, I dabble in this because it's just so interesting. But I was watching a show with somebody talking about how they use movies to funnel money. You know, the movies things get funneled. And I was thinking, that's such a goofball way of looking at things because the movies are not that profitable. And there isn't enough money there to be able to fund something huge off of movies. And so those kinds of things make it seem unprofessional and not smart. And the reason why Catherine Austin Fitz is more interesting to me is that she comes across as really credible, and wow, there's some pretty interesting information here, you know, different from so many other things that I've heard in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although she worked for the government, I think she still speaks the language of the normal people, so she can really break it down for people to understand it. Yeah, she was part of this system. So she knows the people. She met them. She met the Bushes. So she also knows how these people think and how they operate. I'm glad that she's out of that system now and can tell us about it, what she has seen all those years. Because
you know,
it was pretty clear to her that something was wrong.
You know, I had a couple secretaries and people that have been in the government on my program. Alan Walensky was at the same time Catherine Austin Fitz was the assistant secretary under Bush, he was the assistant tax secretary under Bush. And he's been on my show a couple times. And I also had the last secretary of the U.S. Mint, and he talked about stuff going on, and his name, Moy. And it's interesting to talk to them because they are – I would think the Secretary of the Mint would have more information. But, you know, when you talk to them, they just don't talk like Catherine Austin Fitz does. They have a different perspective. Their paradigm is different. I'm not sure if people at that level are really all that connected with what's really going on. I think what's unique about her is having her experience on Wall Street, which makes me think that she has something there. Is her experience on Wall Street and then her database, the information that she got a hold of that showed numbers and showed the corruption. You know, my background is I know how to design, you know, very broad database information networks, all that kind of stuff. That was my systems background, my engineering background. And so there's something there as far as understanding that data aspect of it, and that there could be something there. And that's what I'm very interested in, is being able to say that this stuff could be real and it's professional and it's presented in a way that says, hey, here's some real stuff here. Who else do you have that has some things that are pretty interesting that would pique someone's interest to say, hey, this is, you know, because after watching the 60 Minutes episode of seeing an actual space airplane, you know, and seeing their ability to have laser beams shoot things out of the sky, the solar system, you know, obviously they have more technology than they're talking about. And most of that was, you know, he wouldn't dive into those things. What other things are you diving into at the Secret Space Program?
Dr. Paul LaViolette is a speaker. He really goes into the technology, into the anti-gravity, how it works, how these crafts that they have built, how they operate. Another speaker is Jay.
And how does he know how the anti-gravity stuff works? How does he know?
Also through the patents.
Oh, so he researched, because there's patents out there for this, and he went in and said, hey, this is all accessible to all of us. I happen to understand this, and so I went and looked at the patents and said, this is what the patents that are registered in the patent government patent offices are saying. Okay.
Yeah, and one of those researchers that he focused on was Townsend-Teen Brown. Now, this is a very interesting person in history who had a patent on these technologies and got granted.
They have patents, if this technology is so tied to the secret space program, why would they have the patents accessible to everybody?
It's not accessible in a way that you can make a product out of it and bring it to market. Now, these patents are around there. Some of them you can find in the archives. You can find them. But bring that to market with a product, that's a whole totally different ballgame.
Okay. That's fair enough. So who else do you have?
We've got a fellow, Jay Dyer. Now, what he does, he analyzes film and popular culture. And with his presentation, he's going to show that we are already being conditioned that there is a secret space program and that, yeah, the next phase for humanity is going to the stars and how that is connected to the economy, a space-based economy.
We know there's a secret space program because it was on 60 Minutes. You know, I mean, they came out and said, we have a secret space program. They did that 2 months ago, right? Mm-hmm. By the time this airs, it'll be like 2.5 months ago. So we know that. It's just now he's coming out and saying we're being conditioned with that kind of information to be able to go to the next level with it.
Coming on a mainstream program once with this kind of information and not really telling anything but only one or two statements that, we got a secret space program running, that doesn't affect mainstream people at all. And I can ask everybody here on the streets and they haven't seen that show. A lot of Americans didn't see that show.
Well, the reason I say that, it's a staple, very respected show that the top stuff comes out on. And so what I'm saying is for it to be on there, it shows that it's real. I mean, coming from them.
Yeah, but it's also the part of being, that we're being prepared that this is coming. And 60 Minutes, I'm aware of 60 Minutes. It's a huge mainstream show in the States, but nothing gets shown on 60 Minutes without permission.
Oh, absolutely.
Of the people who run these programs. So this was on purpose.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what he's going to show, that being prepared on what's coming, and especially through big blockbuster movies.
Interesting. So what does he think is coming? What do you think is, what's out there? What's coming to the people? Do you think they're going to, because we talked about the fact that we're not supposed to know what's really going on. But do you think that they're trying to condition us to slowly know what's going on? Like I was saying, that the technology, can't you just get the technology slowly there? Do you think getting the technology there and slowly conditioning us, eventually it can just happen and they don't have to do this big bombshell?
Yeah, it's a drip, drip thing. And, of course, Elon Musk plays a big role in that. There's no way that this guy can come up with these technologies. Elon Musk from Tesla.
Oh, okay.
Now, he's one of those stepping stone guys that is going to that goal that we go into space and not on fossil fuels. So he's
connected with the Obama administration and very connected. I mean, they funded a lot. I mean, there was grants and all sorts of stuff.
Of course, but because he's being supported by the people who want this to get out. It goes in a certain way, it goes in a stepping stone way, and it goes in a slow way.
Interesting. Okay, and that's one of the things you guys are going to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, and what else you got going on?
Who else do we have? We've got Jim Mars on. Now, Jim Mars is a big household name in the alternative community. And he's going to touch upon the intelligence communities had Psy War programs running throughout the Cold War. And one of those programs was about remote viewing.
There really was a person that I know locally here in the Twin Cities is connected with people who actually were part of those programs. Now, they actually had ESP programs and all sorts of things. Now, they all say that nothing really amounted from it, but I don't know if that's true or not.
He's going to do a presentation, and he's going to touch upon Ingo Swann. Now, Ingo Swann was the godfather of remote viewing. No, if your listeners are familiar with remote viewing, but it's actually that you put yourself into a certain mental stage that you can see what's on a certain location.
Okay.
And that works through coordinates.
And this person was able to do that.
Yeah. Now, this person was working for the intelligence community. Now, in one of his books, he also spilled the beans that they were looking in his team on the moon and that they saw all kinds of stuff on the moon. Bases, extraterrestrials, UFO crafts. So that's another aspect of, it's more in a way of testimony, but that there is something out there. That there is technology out there, that we already been to the moon a long time ago, and again, not with the fossil fuel technology.
Well, before we went to the moon back in the late 60s, we went before that?
That's my belief, yeah.
Okay, and then we haven't, as far as the public is concerned, we haven't gone back since. We went once, and that was it.
What we saw through NASA, that was the public space program, alongside and even before that public space program, I believe that there was already a secret space program running. And that was on a different technology.
Interesting. So why do you think they even had a NASA program?
Because I think it was already part of also the program that we have to be conditionalized. You can't come out of the blue with, okay, we've a zero-point technology for you people here, and this is what we can do with it. So what we talked about it before, you need all those steps for people to get adjusted. So it went from that technology, and now we're into Elon Musk, and then the next thing is that we're really going to go into space with a different technology. Now, that was one reason that NASA was there. The other reason is because we have now Elon Musk and those people going to, it costs a lot of money. People need to invest. The public needs to be behind these kind of programs. So in that way, the 60s and the 70s were a great promotion for those space programs because the people really believed in it.
Oh, yeah. Those astronauts were superheroes. I mean, they were stars.
Now what happened when they went to the moon and between now?
Is nothing. I shouldn't say nothing. I don't want to just take away from some of the things that these people are doing. But they, compared to what they did, they really haven't done a lot since.
No, and that's strange. Now,
to me, I think anybody can think clearly. This is why, you know, well, that's why the 60 Minutes program is so relevant, is because they had a space plane on the program. They showed it. So obviously NASA's not doing that anymore. Another department is.
Yeah. You have a different school of thoughts on that. Why didn't we have a professional space program anymore in the way that we had in the late 60s? There's one camp that says we were warned off by somebody out there that we were not allowed, that there is a...
So they truly think that we don't have a space program anymore and we've been warned off, and the other camp thinks we really do, it just went black.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And there's also a camp that say that we never did go to the moon. That it was all a hoax.
Yeah.
Now what we saw, in my opinion, was a hoax. What we got presented, but I think we went to the moon, for sure.
Interesting. All I know is that, from the secret space program standpoint, that's why I keep bringing up the 60 Minutes, is that has showing space plane and then they have technology to fly around in space. I don't know how advanced that is, but it's pretty interesting. So what is your aim with this conference?
That is also multifaceted. Number one reason is to educate people. The number two reason is that we want to record this conference and bring it out on the internet. Your audience on the internet is much bigger than when we do for those couple of hundred people at the conference itself.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah. And, yeah, the third reason is that we're working on a concept that we, sooner or later, that we can make this into a flash drive or something that appeals to students, and that we can go to the universities and hand this out and that they will look at it. Now,
well, they're much more open-minded. The young kids are much more open. I just saw a survey that said whether you believe that there's space outside of, or I'm sorry, life outside of Earth, and more people believe there is than there isn't. And the younger folks believe it more than the older folks. Now, how many people believe that there's a program and the government's covering it up? That's actually not a high percentage. I think it was like 17%. But the majority of people really believe there is life outside this planet, which I think is interesting. So that's saying that people are a lot more open-minded to it.
They're open-minded to that question. And that is a yes or no or I don't know question. But to really understand what the implications are of those questions is something else. And then you need to do your research. And then you need those kids to take a look at that research. But it needs to be presented in a way that connects with these with the university students or with kids or even with mainstream people. What has been done in the last couple of decades on these alternative conferences, it doesn't appeal to mainstream. And there's a good reason for it. One, most of the time it's too technical, but also the packaging is not good. It doesn't look good.
Well, don't you think, okay, it doesn't look good. It might be too technical. They're not talking about social and other kinds of issues. But also, don't you think that in order to get the people who are alternative-minded, they have to try to get things to be sexy for them? So they'll go to some real kind of weird stuff to bring in the alternative folks versus... And I don't want to belittle something that's weird because this whole thing is weird, right? I mean, all of this is weird, but they try to push the envelope as much as they can in the weird arenas. You know, it's weird enough. You don't have to get super weird. They push the envelope and then it really turns off average people because they don't want to. I mean, it's just goofballish kind of. And so it's even though the normal stuff is weird and maybe goofballish, it's important to stay as professional and not get too far out there and give the facts and stuff what you know versus jump off the deep end and just go into all these theories that you can't prove.
Yeah, and there's really a disconnect between a large group in the alternative community and mainstream. They just don't want to deal with that anymore in a lot of different ways when you talk about food and things like that. But what I have always noticed is that people in the alternative community, and I'm generalizing now all the time, because who is that? But people in the alternative community, they always thought that change will come from the alternative community if we try hard enough. And we will attract new people throughout the years, and it's a numbers game. Now, I think real change is going to come from mainstream.
Yes, I agree. You have to have – it's like the tipping point. You've heard the marketing point. Yeah.
Yeah, or else we're going to go on another 50 years. And of course, the group is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But if we want to make a quick paradigm shift change that we really need on this planet – we need to hit mainstream in a way that mainstream is going to listen. Now, mainstream is really controlled by the media. And the media is controlled by the group who doesn't want to get this thing out at this moment. But I think there are now ways through the internet, through the university, that if you can make that product And then you just need the buzz. You need to find a buzz to get this ball rolling. And, I really believe in that approach, that big change will come from university kids when they finally get approached in the right way and they get it.
Well, I think they're more open to talk about it. I think a lot of people are afraid to openly talk about it because they're going to look like they're nuts, you know. And you know, partly it's because of the way the alternative media and the alternative groups display it and focus on it. And that's why I like your lineup, is because I've watched a lot of those conference talks from the last show that you had, and I was really impressed at how professional it was. And so I think just being perfect, because nobody wants to watch something that's really goofy. You know, if you can say that this Harvard researcher doctor is doing all this research and he's backing up the stuff as well, it's so much more credible. You know, you get somebody who's studied at Oxford, you get somebody who's been an assistant secretary in the government, you get people who are very credible, who are professional, talking about it in a way that is like, okay, I can connect with this, versus these goofballs, you know, that I can't connect with.
I can give you two little examples that I think what we're trying to change in the whole conference culture. One is the slides. The way that it has been done for years in the alternative community is that the speaker will come on stage with his own laptop and he's got his own slides that he's going to show. Now, a lot of those slides have the wrong colors. Don't look good. It doesn't connect with you. It's like the 80s again. What we're trying to say is to the speakers, we want your presentation sent to us, and we will put your slides into a format. Now, we're not going to edit your slides. It's not about that. The information stays the same. But it needs to look like a format, that the presentation needs to look the same. So you can present it as a product that is going to be taken professional and people are going to look at it. Now, the other thing is what I mentioned with the laptop. You don't want a speaker go there with his own laptop with all kinds of technical difficulties. Because
I would have technical difficulties if I came there.
Yeah, and again, we had it last year. With a speaker, and he couldn't find his slides, and video clip didn't start. Yeah, and you don't want that. So we say, no, you give your presentation to us. We run it from our central computer, and we're going to try to make sure that everything runs in a professional way. Do things go wrong? Yes, always. Also with us, and also in high television productions, things go wrong. But you can make sure that the probability that something goes wrong gets smaller. And this is only two little examples of why we try to do it in a different way. Because I think, yeah, mainstream is a big part of the solution.
Well, yeah, because if mainstream doesn't buy in, then it doesn't. It's never going to get to a point where we can really know what's going on, right? Because people have a lot of power. If people demand things, things happen. And people who are secretive, they don't want to be secretive forever. They want to share their world with others. So it's I think there's issues all around. I think it's very fascinating. I'm going to be there because I want to hear what people are saying. I think it's really interesting. But to me, I don't want to be connected with something that's not professional. And I think that this is you guys are taking it to a more professional level. And I think there's something there for people to, you know, even if you're not there mentally where you think that there's all these conspiracies, but there's a lot of facts and information there that are facts. And so you've got to take that for what it's worth, and then you can put it into your own paradigm. But there's just so much interesting stuff there.
We're not focusing on UFOs on this conference. That doesn't believe that we don't believe that there's an ET out there who's flying a craft that is seen as a UFO here. No, yeah, But the biggest part that we're focusing on is human-based technology. We got this stuff, and maybe we did it through re-engineered alien technology, or we came up with it ourselves, or both.
But there's much more technology than what we realize, is what we're saying. And that's what the whole thing is about, is whether it's developed here and it has nothing to do with extraterrestrials, or it does, but it doesn't matter. We're looking at it, and the fact is it's here. You know, there was the Phoenix Lights is a really big example of a thing where thousands of people saw it. So there are, you know, it was a huge spaceship that, or I shouldn't say spaceship, I don't know what it was. It was a big ship that was over the Phoenix, and lots of people saw it. But, you know, I've seen reports and investigations of people saying it's just our own military. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, okay, well, that's fine. Is it our own military or not? What is it? You know, how do we have something like that? Did you know there was a Westall event in Australia? like Roswell. You've heard of it?
No.
If you do a search, there's this Westall event, which is my last name. It's called Westall. Mm-hmm. And they're my kind of distant relatives, but they're related to me. They own the school, and there was this way. And it's to Australia, it's like the Roswell event here. I think it's funny.
Okay,
I just learned that a year ago. But anyways, go ahead.
You have to go there once.
I do. I got to see what that's about.
And the whole day you can tell people, hey, that's the same as my last name.
This is my relative that owns this place. That's funny. So what can we expect from you in the future? What do you have going on now? Because you have the energy conferences and you have the secret space conference, and you're really trying to educate people on what's going on. What are we going to see from you in the future?
That all depends on time and budget.
You don't have endless time and budget?
No. because we would like this do in a way that we can do this 24/7. We really like team conferences, and one conference that we have in the pipe is about transhumanism, because I think that is going to be a very big topic.
What do you mean by transhumanism?
It's about the topic that. One aspect is about they're talking about the singularity, that machine is going to be smarter than a human being in the future. Another part of transhumanism is that people are going to be enhanced in a way that they are going to be more machine than human.
And that's already starting to happen. We're not more machine than human now, but the bionic, you know, man and woman, that's starting to happen.
Yeah, and you know, we take it a step further. I think geoengineering, the whole chemtrail topic is connected to this. And, yeah, I think humanity is also being set up to transfer into a different kind of species. So that is one of the topics that we want to have a conference about.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. I had a person on who is to talk about hyper-realistic holograms. And we have the technology now to do holograms that you can't tell the difference between the real thing and not. And so we're starting to have the technology to do some amazing things that people see every day. And, you know, they have the technology to feed your brain so that you can see things, you know, feed directly to your eyes. So that, like, if you have a camera that's on Mars, they can feed that image directly through your eyes as if you're seeing it, as if you're there. They have that technology now. They've had that for a while. And the public is, you know, knows about it. I mean, they don't know, but the mass public knows about it. But they can if they just want to, because it's been on television shows and it's been open. There's a lot of really neat technology that's coming down the pike just that we know of. Not that we don't know of. And also the organ growing and being able to develop organs. I have a person that's going to be on the show that's talking about the organs don't need to look like if you're going to develop a liver, it doesn't need to look like a liver. It just needs to function like a liver. As long as we have the stem cells and the units, the specifics of the cells, we can actually build any organ that we want. And he's
he's going to come on and explain the science behind just growing different elements, however we, you know, whatever we want. As long as we know what the base elements are, we can make it.
Yeah, and
that's crazy.
And it's not that I'm totally opposed to these kind of transhumanist developments. What we're going to focus is on, because you have conferences now on transhumanism, but they are really on the positive side. I really want to focus on, okay, where we're going to draw the line in some of these kind of things. Do we really, don't we have to discuss the implications long term? What's it going to mean for a human being? What's it going to mean for employment for people in the future? Is this going to cause a war between the have and have nots of these technologies?
And we're already starting to see some of that. Right.
Yeah, and so on and so on and so on. So, yeah, it's again addressing things that are not shared in the mainstream, but that needs to be discussed.
But what do you do about things that are shared and the mainstream doesn't care because they're too preoccupied by the Kardashians, but they are shared? It is out there. It is – people are trying to educate you on this, and you just – A, you're not interested because you're watching the Kardashians, and B, you're not educated because you are too busy watching the Kardashians or because you don't have the resources to be educated. There are people who – that really, if they grew up and were exposed to different things, they would be different people, right? So – there's this issue where no matter what you show them, they're not going to get it and be able to utilize it.
You will always have that group. And
how large is that group?
I think it's more important. Like, there's a lot of followers in the mainstream, people who just go along what this person says or that person says. Now, those kind of persons who tell other people in the mainstream are much more important.
Those I see what you're saying. So the instigators, most of the people are followers.
The rest will follow sooner or later. Now, I can see that there's going to be a divide between two groups of people, of the people who get it and the people who don't get it and think this is all wonderful and want these technologies and are taking them to the extreme. I think that clash will be there in the future, if Pandora's box is not going to open before that.
But isn't that the case of just mindfulness? I mean, we have an issue. That's where you get back to psychopaths and mindfulness and just doing things and not even realize what you're doing. You're destroying communities and you don't even know you're doing it because you're just not mindful of what your acts and what you're doing. And the system rewards you for going after profit and doing these things that are killing communities and you're not even mindful of it, because you're just so focused.
No, people sooner or later will be confronted with this because the system that is running things now is not human in all kinds of way. It goes directly in against humanity.
Oh, you're saying it's psychopathic or it's not helpful for humans.
It's not sustainable in the long term. So
sure.
I think it will implode on itself. Now, what I think, so it will change in the future, but what I propose is let's stay ahead of that implosion. Let's try to make already a difference now and sooner or later, because we don't want that implosion, because that's not a good thing either.
Well, we have issues with food, you know, when it comes to eating meat and stuff, that you know, the numbers are such that the number of acres and resources it takes to develop cows and chickens and things that we need for protein to feed the people is too many acres of land and too many resources for the people that we have. And if we keep developing people without changing our eating habits, we just don't have enough. It's a mathematical problem. We just don't have the resources for it. And so we're confronting a lot of those issues. And now when you talk about it openly, you know, some of these people that are talking about it, they're coming across as wanting to reduce population and they look like they're a bunch of bad guys wanting to kill off people. But the reality is that we have a food issue and how do we take care of it? And how do we take care of the people that we are going to be having? So there's already, things are already starting to come to a head in certain areas of our of our system, where people inside the system are realizing this isn't working and this will not work because the numbers just don't work.
Yeah, only that it goes too slow, in my opinion. We can go on another 10 years in this way.
Is it going slow because of the mindfulness? I always call it people are just tunneling. They're not paying attention to what's really going on. Just the profit, not caring about the greater good because they're so focused on themselves and survival that it doesn't get, until it affects them directly, it won't be a problem.
It's even, and I could take a look at myself, even people who are aware of all these kind of things, it is so difficult to step out of that matrix and do it in a totally different way that you think it should be. It can almost not be done. And of course, there are people who say, yeah, you can go and live in a community somewhere, a sustainable life there. Yes and no. A lot of people don't have the funds to establish that for themselves. They're caught up in the system. They live in a city. They have their friends, a family here that you don't want to get be turned away from. So, and food is the perfect example. Yes, I would love to have a perfectly healthy diet, but here in Holland, it's almost not payable to live in that kind of a way.
Yeah, you can't. And plus, who wants to live that way in a lot? You want to be around your friends and family, and you want to raise your kids in a normal, I shouldn't say normal, what's normal, but in an environment that has people around it. We're herd animals. We want to be around the herd.
Exactly. So I'm in one foot in that alternative community, and one foot I'm still in mainstream, and I also do all those mainstream things. I also enjoy watching soccer on a Sunday.
And going to a movie.
So I also help that system to sustain itself. So it's difficult. It's difficult. But I'm hopeful. I think it will change. I'm sure that it's going to change.
I just get concerned that I was looking at the numbers yesterday about the food issue and about the protein with the animals. And I get concerned because of how people will end up. Once it becomes an issue where you can't feed everybody and people are starving now, but once it becomes something that affects them, I just don't know if people are going to take the high road and do good things versus do what they think is survival and just cut off resources for whole groups of people. I just don't know if humanity has evolved to that level where we can do what's good for the general good versus what's good for me. And that's the nervousness of it that I have.
I think everything is micro, macro. And what I see in my own life and also around me, most of the time things have to get very bad before things change. But in the end, most of the time things change. But at the last moment, and I see this going that way a bit. So I'm still.
That's my concern. That's my point.
So I'm still hopeful, but I think it's going to get much worse the next coming years.
Well, you know what? I thank you so much for joining. It's getting late out there. What time is it out there now?
Let me see. It's 8:45.
Oh, it's not so bad.
if you were up at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, my gosh, it's bad. Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating. I was just going to have you on for like 15 minutes to talk about the speakers at the Secret Space Program, and you were so interesting that I'm like, I am talking to this guy. He is very interesting. So I'm sure the listeners will get a lot out of this too.
No, thank you very much for the compliment. And if you catch me in a better time for me, then I'm more clear in my head and I can speak better English.
Well, then you'll solve all these world problems for us if you have a little nap.
No. The Dutch people think they are the best in the world in a lot of things, but you will never hear me say that.
Well, I hope not. If you are, then I have things I can sell you over here. Okay, well, good. Well, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful night.
You too. And we will meet in Texas. I'm going to meet you in person, and that's going to be October 31st and the 1st of November, the weekend of Halloween. Yeah, that's going to be
big. Are people going to be dressed up there? Because I'm not a dresser-upper.
I hope not.
If I come in looking like a mummy, people are going to be wondering. That's good. I don't want to have people around me looking like witches and mummies.
And some people already told me, how can you do this in a Halloween weekend? This is important for American people. Now, if people have to make the decision between Halloween and coming to this conference, then they don't get it. So I hope to see everybody at this conference.
Okay. Well, and how do they get more information about it?
Simply go to our website, secretspaceprogram.org.
Okay.
And, all the information is there, the speakers, the program, the ticket system, or like us on Facebook. It's also Secret Space Program.
Okay, and well, great. I'll have that up online on my radio page as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, and you have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and you can hear the whole interview there as a podcast. Or any other place that I have my podcasts, iTunes and Stitcher and other places. And you will be able to hear the whole thing. On my website, you are also able to put your comments in. I love to hear from people and hear what you think of this. And you can also get more information on his conferences. His link is up there to the Secret Space Program. I believe it's secretspaceprogram.org. So go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and you can see all my past shows and things. So for now, everyone have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.